You're listening to Expand the Curve, and I'm your host, Olive Bassey. Here we discuss controversial topics within plus-size representation in all industries, along with real-life stories from everyday people. In order for change to occur, you must be the change. Let's contract the norms and expand the curve. Welcome back, everyone. It's your host, Olive Bassey, and I have a very amazing guest. Her name's Lavanna, who is a clinical social work / therapist. Her practice, Silver Linings Counseling and Hypnosis, is an LGBTQ, poly, and kink pluck inclusive. She specializes in eating and body image, along with complex trauma. Glad to have you on here. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. I'm excited to learn more about the psychology behind body image and be able to get a few life lessons along the way from your experience and from your work.
Wonderful. I'm happy to do it.
Awesome. Can you tell my audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am originally from Ohio. My family moved here in the middle of the pandemic to Florida. And I'm married. I have a husband and two kids. And yeah, we're just getting used to this whole Florida situation down here. There's so many things to get used to here, but we love it. And yeah.
That's awesome. I know it's not easy trying to move during a pandemic.
No, it was incredibly difficult, but it's been great. It can't be winter in Florida. Coming from Ohio, alone.
That's for sure. Absolutely. So you are a therapist. Can you give us a little bit about your practice at your clinic?
Yeah. So, and completely online, and I have a license in Ohio and Florida. And actually at this point, all my clients are in Ohio. I see people virtually. It's amazing. I work with people who have eating disorders and or complex trauma in the LGBTQ community. And we work on accepting our bodies. We work on having healthy relationships with food and healing a lot of past wounds. And our relationship with our bodies and food are really interconnected with trauma for a lot of people. Yeah. So that is the main focus of what I do in my practice.
That's awesome. Is it just you? Like, are you the only therapist or do you work with other therapists as well for your counseling services?
No, it's just me. It's just me in a private practice. So
that's awesome. That's really cool. What made you want to go into this field and work on these type of specialized heavy topics?
Throughout the years that I've been in practice, I've had different jobs, different populations I've worked with. And I've always worked with women and LGBTQ clients. I just feel a connection. And the issues that I've worked with have changed over the years. At first, I was working like with mostly trans people and pushing, making letters for trans people more accessible, because a few years ago, you had to go through a lot of hoops to get a letter to have hormonal treatment or surgery or things like that. So that was a big focus. And just over the past, I'd say 5 years or so, it's gone through my own journey. I've attracted people who are similar to me and who've gone through similar things as me, as I have recovered from an eating disorder and I've healed from trauma. And as I have healed my relationship with my body, I've wanted to help other people with the same experience.
That's awesome. It's always the people who come from those personal experiences that give like the greatest advice and wisdom and strength, because not only you share that bonding experience, but you can really relate to them.
Yeah, totally. There's so many situations with, I think the two things that I bring to our sessions that only can come from a place of having experienced it is one's weight stigma, what it feels like to be discriminated against because of your size. A lot of therapists who aren't bigger people may downplay that or try to make this like a personal issue. Like, you just need to accept your body, when it's so much more than that. You can't just accept your body when the world doesn't accept your body. And then two, trauma. There's a lot of people out there who have really difficult situations with partners or family members. And I've had situations like that in my life where I understand the complexity of that. I understand having to make hard decisions and ending relationships and things like that. So a lot of times people who come from healthier backgrounds may not really understand the complexities of healing that trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you say our decision making and our psyche for body image is influenced by our society, or is it more internally? It's just how our body just over, how our mind and body just develops those thoughts.
You mean, are you talking about like viewing thin people as better? Yeah, no, that's definitely societal. If you look over the years, like I've done presentations of ideal body sizes, and it's changed over the centuries. There have been times when very large women have been the ideal, and there's been times when very tiny women have been the ideal. We're in an age now where we're supposed to be quote unquote healthy, but somehow be thin, but have certain areas be big, certain areas be small, things we have zero control over. So it really is influenced by society and not personal values, but it's always focused on women.
Yeah.
That's the main focus, is that it's a woman's body that's objectified.
Yeah. And in today's like society and stuff like that, I feel the term healthy is being put into this one label still to this day, even though there's so many aspects of that. What do you think of the term healthy in your practice and in your work?
I think health is a very subjective thing. Just the general use of the word healthy is usually fat phobic. It's usually ableist. It's often racist and white focused on what the perception of health should look like, what we should be eating, how we should be acting, what our body should look like, and not taking into account that there's a diversity of life, that we don't all come in one shape and size, and there's this ideal and we don't fit into that. So also health has become a euphemism for you're too fat. Like, I just want you to be healthy. I've had so many people tell me, I just want you to be healthy. And I'm like, you have no idea what my health status is. A, you literally have no idea what my blood work looks like, my abilities, my fitness. You don't know anything about me. You're just looking at what I look like. And two, health is not like a moral imperative. If someone's not healthy, there's lots of reasons for that. And they don't owe it to someone else to be healthy. That's something you have to deal with as an individual. I like the word healthy because I want people to have healthy relationships with themselves and with food and with their bodies. But that doesn't mean the same thing as most people use that word for.
Yeah, I feel like personally, when I hear the word healthy, it's always been connotated with skinny, looking a certain type of weight. And it's been such a negative connotation for me that it's been so hard for me to look at myself any other way. So having to almost deter myself from the word healthy and focus on just looking at my body, who it is, and accepting it. That's why I really like the body positivity movement. And I wanted to know your thoughts.
The body positive movement had good intentions at the beginning, but now like people, there's a difference between being body positive, meaning at any size that you love your body. There's a difference between that and being like weight inclusive or fat acceptance, because body positive is an individual thing. I love my body, me, Lavanna, I love my body. It's different than the society I live in is okay with my body. So if you're thin or straight sized, it's a lot easier for you to work on that. It's a lot different experience to work on accepting your body and being positive about your body than someone who's fat. And the word body positive, the idea of it is being taken over by some diet industry companies. It's been taken over by the fitness industry. It's love your body by changing it. So it's morphed into this thing where it's not what it was meant to start out to be. And it's taking away from the social implications of being fat and what it means to be fat in this society, and really accepting fat people as having value and not being unworthy because of their size.
Yeah.
That's more of like fat acceptance, is just saying all people are worthy regardless of their size.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to, I wish the body positivity movement remain true to its original values. But like you said, it's very much honestly brand focused, because everyone's trying to sell you something. And I'm sure you see it all the time. Oh, we have this and stuff like that. But you're still not focusing on me as a that person. Like, you're still not seeing me for me.
And like the example of this that really stands out recently is this diet program called Noom. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of it. I don't know if you've heard of it, but its whole marketing strategy is it's not a diet, it's psychology. But it is a diet. Anytime that someone's telling you, don't eat this, this is a bad food, like only eat a little bit of this, or anytime someone's taking away your agency over what you eat, or you're choosing to give that to somebody, it's a diet. It's fat phobic. It's saying you need to change. It's not saying we're going to help you like have healthy behaviors. We're going to help you learn about nutrition. We're going to help you learn about how to move your body in a way that feels good and is healthy for you. They're saying we're not a diet, yet the main focus is to lose weight. How is that not a diet?
Yeah,
that is a diet. The fact that diet companies are also saying they're body positive is really messed up.
That infuriates me to my core. It's at that point, it's just, I know you're trying to target a market and you see them as an easy and accessible, but at the same time, we are the most vulnerable group to actually target.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unbelievable. I love that learning more about the body image and fat acceptance and the terminologies behind it. Do you use any specific terms in your practice that my audience can start to have in their vocabulary to help encourage acceptance or neutrality, just being like, okay with your body?
Yeah, I like the word weight inclusive, size inclusive, just basically having the idea that there's not one ideal body type, that bodies come in a diverse range of sizes, just like all our other diversity, hair color, skin color, like size, height. Like, there's so many things that make us interesting and different from each other. And your size and your weight is just one part. So that is definitely something. And then in working with people, like, it's unrealistic to go from I've hated my body my entire life to I love myself, I'm awesome, or even I'm okay with this situation. Sometimes one of the best places you can get to is just being like focusing on what you can do, focusing on the things that you do enjoy about yourself, and validating the part of you that still hates your body or doesn't like certain parts of you. This is the indoctrination we've received from the time we were young, and we continue to get it every day, and it's not going away anytime soon. So of course I have days where I hate my body, but that's okay because I'm working on that. And then I'm learning that my worth is not connected to my body. And that's like the ideal thing, is to separate who you are from a person as a person from your body, your worth as a human being from the size of your body.
Yeah, I really like that. That's very hard to grasp as a concept until you start to apply it. For sure. I know I struggle with that, honestly, on a daily basis, but even doing just like affirmations, like looking at inspirational quotes, it helps along the way, but you really have to apply it to yourself and take that moment to really be kinder to your body. That's how I always see it. Have you noticed like where that kind of like age range you start to develop and be aware of the weight stigma and ostracization that's going on?
Oh, yeah. And most of the people that I've worked with, and I experienced it from kindergarten, people are already commenting on my body. I heard my family members talking about their own body in a derogatory way. I saw people dieting my entire life. I was put on diets. I dieted. The message is consistent. You need to shrink. The way your body is right now is not acceptable. And kids learn that so early. So that's how they target fat kids, larger kids. And you hear younger and younger kids talking about how they need to go on a diet, looking at their body and finding flaws. And they have so much more access to information than I did when I was a kid. There's so many more options of shows to watch, and there's YouTube and there's social media, and there's just so much pressure from all around to look a certain way and feel like something's wrong with you if you don't fit in, if you don't. And honestly, to be teased and shamed for your body.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking because like when I saw that study, I was like, yeah, I think that was me. I just didn't fully grasp the content until I was older of how mm-hmm. much like my peers and my environment really influenced my thoughts and feelings and emotions. And it was heartbreaking because I feel all that time worrying about my body, I could have just been living my life.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And I don't know where I would have been if I was in a different place with that different mindset, but I wanted to know if you could give your 18-year-old self or anybody else any piece of advice, even one piece of advice, what would it be to help break that?
It's so hard. I would say to my 18-year-old self, you are a good person. You matter. Everything about you matters. You are worthy, and the size of your body has nothing to do with your worth, whether you're smaller or whether you're bigger. You're an amazing person, and try to disconnect what's going on with my body from all the other wonderful things in life. I probably wouldn't have listened to myself if I went back in time. That's the hard thing. It's you may even have people in your life telling you that, but you have doctors and you have TV shows and you have social media and you have newspapers and the groceries. You literally cannot escape the message that the bigger you are, the worse of a person you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so heartbreaking to see on every little thing that we interact with and stuff like that. What would you recommend as a society and all these types of industries, especially fashion, healthcare specifically, what can they do to start implementing and starting to develop those psychological changes that would help their audience, their patients, their clients to be able to be more weight inclusive?
Medical industry is a huge problem. To me, it's the biggest problem that we have, that we're facing as fat people. I know I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow, and I've been sweating it for the past 2 weeks because I know I'm either going to be weighed or I'm going to have to tell them I don't want to be weighed. And even though I advise people not to do that, it's so hard to bring myself to do that. And if I do have any health issues, I know they're automatically going to tell me to lose weight, and then I'm going to have to explain to them. It's such an emotional burden on the patient when the doctor could just say, okay, you have some health issues, let's say. What behaviors can you do to help that health issue? If your blood sugar is too high, what are some ways to change that? Instead of saying lose, you can educate people about how food affects your blood sugar or how exercise affects your blood sugar. Refer people to intuitive eating dietitians who specialize in helping people eat in a way that's good for their body without restriction. And don't make assumptions about somebody. If you look at somebody, like I've had so many doctors who are just like, what are you doing about your weight? And I literally have no health issues whatsoever. None. Zero. And it's, you're young now. This was a long time ago. You're young now, but once you hit 40, like basically you're heading downhill to an early death. What are you basing that on? What information are you, just by how I look? And then that perpetuates people, fat people, not going to the doctor because they don't want to hear it, because there's nothing they can do about it because they've tried to diet their entire lives and they know it never works. So then you avoid going to the doctor. You don't find out when you have a problem early on. So then you may have progressed disease because you've avoided going to the doctor. And then they say, well, it was because you were fat, not because you avoided the doctor, because the doctors are fat phobic. It's just like this whole string of events that leads to bad medical treatment for fat people and avoidance of medical treatment for fat people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know right now there's some resources currently that are trying to help bring more awareness and offer those types of alternative resources like yourself. I know Health at Every Size, they're just offering all these resources, trying to connect with all these providers, these industries, to be able to bring one whole organization to bring that kind of awareness for all types of size inclusivity. And I wasn't sure, what did you think of the Health at Every Size and the NAFA movement?
Health at Every Size is the foundation of how I approach people who are dealing with health issues, because I work with a lot of people with like chronic pain and chronic illnesses and are told often they need to restrict what they eat. They need to lose weight. They need to cut out entire food groups and things like that. And basically that the size of their body is the problem, is the reason why they're ill. I try to help people learn that there are actions you can take to help your health, but that is unrelated to your body size. And it takes a lot of unlearning to grasp that concept.
I'm sure you're just like trying to unthread a needle with these patients and these clients, because that's so rooted into their mindset that it's heartbreaking. And to have to deal with the middle age and like the 40s, understanding how their mind works and being able to break it down and be able to get through those barriers and have some type of clarity and comfort and understanding. I really do appreciate that type of practice that you offer, because I'm sure that is not easy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do it because I live it. I have not unlearned everything. I've unlearned a lot, and I know what to say and I know how to help people, but as human beings, we're very complicated. We're not like just one part. Like, we have all different parts of us. There's a part of me that knows logically the research says diets are not sustainable, weight loss is not sustainable. There's a part of me that knows that I can stand up to medical providers, I can advocate for myself. There's a part of me that knows like I'm a worthy person regardless of what I look like. But then there's the other part of me that was damaged from all these messages that's still very much alive. And I have those two parts that go against each other, as all of us do. And so that's how I think I can, you know, best help people, is that I get it. I completely get it. And the expectation for helping people with eating disorders or having a better relationship with their body isn't, you need to stop being so mean to yourself. That's not what the solution is. It's so much bigger than that. So
Yeah, you can't just say don't do something, because it's like there's so many steps and levels to it. It's a progression. Mm-hmm. You can't just quit cold turkey, like smoking cigarettes. You can't just stop. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's lifelong.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the holiday season, and we know how hectic it can be trying to shop for gifts, especially when you're on a budget. I was constantly trying to find discount codes, wasting so much time and energy. Well, no more. Honey does the work for me. How? Their tool automatically finds and applies coupon codes on 40,000 popular sites. One click is all it takes. It's completely free and easy to use. All you have to do is download the browser extension, then visit your favorite online stores, and Honey does its magic. Your holiday shopping just got a whole lot easier. Go to joinhoney.com/REF/1RC8. That's joinhoney.com/REF/1RC8. I know your work, you deal with hypnotherapy. Can you like dive into that? Because I'm actually not familiar with that.
Yeah. When you do hypnotherapy, basically you're in hypnosis, you're in a trance state, like basically, which just means you're very relaxed. And then we do a regular counseling session, except it goes a little different because you're very relaxed. Your eyes are closed. We spend a lot of time to get you that relaxed and to build strength inside of you and safety inside of you, because a lot of times that's missing in us, that we feel like we need to find safety outside of us, or we need to find strength outside of us. That's part of the experience. And then talking about whatever it is that you want to work on and looking at the patterns in your life. So if someone wants to work on like anxiety, we talk about what's going on now. And then we say like, when did you first experience anxiety? What was that like for you when you first experienced it? To make a connection that the things that we're dealing with today, a lot of the behaviors that we have that we want to stop doing were helpful to us at one point in our life.
Would you say eating disorders come from body dysmorphia? And how would you define body dysmorphia?
Body dysmorphia is when you see yourself different than how you look. A lot of times it can be if you think you feel like you're fatter than you are, or some people, it doesn't even have to be weight with body dysmorphia could be like you feel like a certain body part is ugly, or and you just fixate on it and you can't let it go and you see yourself so differently than what you're, how you truly look. Some eating disorders can be triggered by being in environments where like losing weight is such a big value. That's the only way to achieve the value, like in the family, if the family has this value of being thin and being quote unquote healthy and all this stuff, then those eating disorder behaviors can result from that. A lot of times, the biggest group of people who suffer from eating disorders is binge eating disorder. And that is complicated because it's a mixture of a trauma response, because when you eat, you calm your body down. And a lot of times people who have binge eating have been in really stressful situations, especially as kids, and they didn't know how to calm down because they were maybe having parents who were the ones stressing them out, who were the ones who were supposed to teach them to calm down. So they use food to calm down. And then that can develop into adulthood, into these cycles of diet and binge, restrict and binge. And even people who don't have like diagnosable eating disorders, a lot of people experience that. That's common to be like, yeah, I was on like the whatever diet for 6 months, I lost all this weight, and then I put it right back on plus 5 pounds. That's just normalized, but that's not normal. It's not normal to severely restrict what you eat to the point that your body is afraid of its survival, so that it makes you want to binge and overeat and have intense cravings that you can't ignore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So eating disorders are very complicated.
They are very complicated. It's such a touchy subject, and you have to be gentle with them, but also be tough with them too. Like, you have to face that you are going through this, but you have to realize I'm here to support and listen to your story because we can get through this together, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I love learning about your clinic and everything. How did you get the name Silver Lining? I love that. Absolutely. Like, it's just so positive and so welcoming. Like, when I read it, I was like, oh, that's so nice.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
The story behind the name is that the kind of therapy that I've always done is what we call like existential therapy, where the healing comes from finding meaning in your experiences. And that was before I even learned about trauma-focused therapy, which there's a lot of that goes into it. But it's like finding the silver lining. How do we heal from our pain and also learn something from it, grow from it, not be like, this happened to me and like I'm damaged for the rest of my life and there's no hope for me. You can say, I was harmed, I was hurt, and that should never have happened to me. And I'm going to heal from it. And then I'm going to grow and I'm going to take what I learned from that to do different for my kids, or be a better employee, be a better citizen of the world. So yeah, that's where that came from. Just trying to find the silver lining in bad situations.
Oh, I absolutely love that. That is so welcoming. I swear, like when I saw that, I was like, oh my God. Like I said, where have you been all my life?
Oh my God. You're so sweet.
No, you're absolutely amazing for that. It's truly amazing. I want to know, because you have an alternative approach to your practice and everything, how are you like received among your peers and your colleagues? And because you've mentioned research studies and all that, it is a very diverse practice that sometimes your peers might feel like, I think you might need to go back to what traditional methods, or maybe stick to what works. How do you feel among your peers?
There are, I would say, a lot of camps, but two big camps of therapists. There's the therapists that focus on researched models of therapy that have outcomes that show you how successful they are. And then there's the therapists who focus on your relationship with the client and creating spaces that are not judgmental and doing whatever needs to be done in the moment, regardless of what a therapeutic model tells you to do. There's a limit. Like I wouldn't like do, I don't know, tarot cards in my session, or I don't know anything out there, but I'm not so focused on what research tells me I need to do. Like, cognitive behavioral therapy has been like the gold standard for therapy. And the reason I learned hypnotherapy and other more trauma focused types of therapy is because there's just a limit to it. Like, cognitive behavioral therapy is about, you have a problem, you need to change the way you think about it, and then your behavior is going to change. And we are so much more complicated than that. There's so much more to us than that. So I guess that's how I would approach it. Like, the one thing in research that is shown over and over again is that the most important indicator of success or predictor of success is the relationship that you have with your therapist. So regardless of whatever kind of interventions they use, if you have a good relationship with your therapist and you trust them and you feel like they understand you, you are more likely to have the results that you want.
Oh, okay. I really like that, because I want to try therapy and I just haven't found the right therapist for me. But all my friends and people I know that have tried therapy, they've all had their experiences, some good, some bad. And some are in the middle of like their progress and stuff like that, but they haven't truly committed to the therapist and stuff. So they have to bounce around. But you saying it begins with trusting and the process of being able to work with your therapist and being able to accept them. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, what types of advice would you recommend for someone who is looking for a therapist?
Okay. So that's a really good question, because I've had a lot of bad therapists myself and I've learned a lot along the way. So this is even coming more from a client standpoint than from the therapist standpoint. One, you want to find somebody who markets themselves towards whatever it is that you're dealing with. So somebody who specializes. I don't specialize in bipolar disorder. That's not something I do. So I don't, if someone calls me and says, my main issue in life is I have bipolar disorder, I'll say, I don't specialize in that, but I can find you somebody who does. You want to find somebody who specializes in your area, because a lot of therapists will just take anyone who calls them. And there's, especially when you're dealing with eating disorders and body image, you want to make sure the person truly understands the complexities of that. So look for marketing. Do they speak to the things that you're dealing with? Do they have training in the area that you are dealing with? I would say make sure they give you a free consultation on the phone, that they're willing to talk with you. You can have a conversation. A lot of times I offer a 15-minute consultation and you get a sense. If you talk to someone for 15 minutes, you can get a sense if you like them or not, if you connect with them. And then also when you start out, you can be in the mindset of like your interview, that you don't have to stay with somebody just because you saw them once or twice or even for 6 months. They are there for you. They are working for you. And it's hard because you have these relationships where you sit in a room together and depending on what issue you're dealing with, you may feel like obligated to them. You may feel like you can't tell them something. And that's the other thing I would say, is be 100% honest with your therapist. Because a lot of times we don't know what you're thinking. If we say the wrong thing, like, we're just people. So if someone, I always tell people, if I say the wrong thing, tell me, because I can't change it unless you tell me. So that's some advice I would give people looking to find a therapist.
Yeah, because in this day and age, I think because of the pandemic, it really hit a lot of people. And obviously, like, therapy is now becoming a little bit more virtual or a hybrid, where it's like half in person, half online. And so there's so many people who have ran with this idea that, oh, I am a collective group, I can work with all types of stuff. And it's very misleading, because I don't feel like I'm being heard, I'm being represented, and I don't feel like you will be able to offer what I need. So that's why a lot of my friends were a little hesitant or feel like therapy has never been good for them. So they always try like self-help books and stuff like that. But I know for like your advice, that's the most helpful thing I've ever heard all day. Someone hasn't even given me that type of advice, where you need to be 100% honest. You need to do your research. And I want to know, what type of resources or what type of books would you recommend for someone who's looking into getting into therapy or starting the practice of the healing process?
It's so like individual. Like, it's hard for me to just throw a book or resource out there for you. But what I will say is, take the time to understand yourself. and be clear with yourself what it is that you want for yourself. You don't have to be like, okay, I want to achieve this and this, and but at least have a sense of what you're looking to change in your life. The question I ask people when I first meet them is, when you're done with therapy or when you are ready to not have as many sessions, how is your life going to be different? So ask yourself that question and then you'll get answers about what it is that you want to work on. And then there are resources like Psychology Today, which is a website where you can put in what you're looking for. And it's a list of therapists. A lot of therapists are on there, or just even Googling therapists near me, eating disorders or something like that. That's a good place to start. And then the person that you're working with, if you feel comfortable with them, can give you like a specific resources to help you deal with whatever it is you're coming in with.
Yeah, absolutely. You definitely have to do your research, guys. Don't just be dilly-dally and just find the first pick and like, yep, that's good for me. No, because like she said, there's so many people out in this world who are just trying to get as many clients as they want, but not really looking into finding someone who targets what your needs are, helps you focus, makes you the actual person of interest. Like they really want to get to know you and your clinic. You really do a great job of that, right from the website to hearing her own story and her own experiences. It's just, I really do appreciate hearing from you because you truly give that insight that a lot of people don't know from a therapist perspective.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think that you want, if you're looking to have like a transparent relationship with your therapist, like you want to see that they are very clearly marketing what it is that they do. Mm-hmm. And if you are dealing with body image, if you're fat, and even if you don't have an eating disorder or anything else, a good place to start is with somebody who identifies as weight inclusive, size inclusive, or health at every size. Mm. Because you're not going to have to deal with the fat phobia bullshit. Sorry, excuse my language.
Oh, you're fine. But, go ahead.
You know, you're not going to have to deal with diet culture. You're not going to have to deal with a therapist who, like for me, one time a therapist told me, if you don't lose weight, all your organs are going to start failing and you're going to die soon.
What?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, she told me God. That. Yeah.
And like she's still...
she's still practicing. I just saw her recently. Yes, she's still practicing. So if you can find somebody who identifies himself clearly as health at every size, that will cut out on that aspect.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Wow. It's amazing the people that are still practicing in medicine and psychology, because like, why? Who gave you this license?
Yeah, I've had many situations where I'm like, oh my God, this is borderline like reporting them to the board, like some of the stuff that I've experienced.
Like it's almost like unethical to say that, but
it's completely unethical. Like one of the things we're trained as therapists is our what they call scope of practice. What am I trained to advise people on? I have no training in medicine, organ function, blood. I have no training in that. Even if I think I know something, I cannot say something like that to somebody because I don't have the training to confidently give advice or help based on science. I don't have that science. That's not what I do.
Yeah.
So...
yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Just stick to what you know. Please don't defer.
Don't take diet advice from your therapist. If they tell you to cut carbs or take supplements, like that is not something that a therapist should be advising you to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So you are an absolute delight to speak with. Where can listeners find you more if they want to get a consultation with you, learn more resources, or start the therapy session?
You can find me on Instagram. That's my main kind of place where you can find what I'm up to. It's Silver Linings OH. Silver Linings OH. And I have a website. You can find it from there, silverliningpsychotherapy.com. My schedule online. So if you're interested in scheduling with me, you don't have to make a phone call, which I personally appreciate because I hate making phone calls. So
yeah, me too.
You can also, you can text me on the number that I have on there. I just think talking on the phone can be really hard. It can be a barrier to making an appointment. So we don't ever have to talk if you don't want to, or we can set up an appointment via, you know, email or text. And Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on here. I feel like I've learned so much about just the whole therapy process, and what you do really is truly amazing. So just learning you and your experience, it really does teach, and I hopefully my audience can learn more about how they can help themselves.
That's awesome. Yes, I'm glad that you're offering this information out to people. The more people, the better, the more exposure we can have to these kinds of ideas that go outside of what our culture is telling us, the better.
Yeah, of course. You truly do expand the curve.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Expand the Curve. Leave us a review and tell us what you think. You can keep up with the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Expand the Curve. If you want to support the podcast with a monthly donation, visit our Patreon.